Richard Pearson and I have just arrived at the Wilmoth Farm in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. The strange scene here is like something out of a modern Arabian Nights. There are car headlights and more arriving all the time that are throwing an enormous spot on this thing that is directly in front of us. It's half buried in a vast pit. Now, it must have struck with terrific force because the ground is covered with splinters of a tree that it must have hit on its way down. What I can see of the object itself doesn't look very much like a meteor. Certainly not like any meteor I've ever seen. It looks more like a huge cylinder. It has a diameter of, what would you say, Professor Pearson?
What's that?
What's the diameter, sir?
About 30 yards.
About 30 yards, according to Professor Pearson. Now, the metal on the sheath, I've never seen anything like it. The color is sort of a yellowish-white, and curious spectators are pressing close to the object in spite of the efforts of police to keep them back. Would you mind letting us through? Would you let us through, please? Policemen are trying to keep the crowd back, and Professor Pearson is speaking with
Mr. Wilmoth,
who would be the owner of the farm here. Now, he may have some interesting facts to add. Mr. Wilmoth, sir, we're with Public Radio. Mr. Wilmoth, we're with Public Radio News. Can you tell us, sir, what you can remember of this visitor that dropped in on your backyard? Closer, Mr. Wilmoth. Closer. Sir, closer, please.
I was listening to the radio.
Closer and louder, please, sir.
Pardon me.
Louder. We have to hear you, sir.
Yes,
closer.
Sir. I was listening to the radio and kind of drowsing. Now, this professor fellow was talking about Mars, and I was half dozing
right.
and half...
And but then what happened, Mr. Wilmoth?
Well, I'll tell him. As I was saying, you see, I was listening to the radio kind of halfway.
Right, you saw something, Mr. Wilmoth?
Well, not first off. I heard something.
What is it you heard, sir?
I heard a hissing sound like this. It's kind of like a 4th of July rocket.
And then what?
I turned my head out the window and would have sworn I was asleep and dreaming.
Yeah?
I seen a kind of greenish streak, and then zingo, something smacked the ground, knocked me clear out of my chair.
Were you frightened, Mr. Wilmoth?
I ain't quite sure. I reckon I was kind of riled.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wilmoth.
You want me to tell you some more?
No, sir. That's quite all right. That's plenty. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Now, that was Mr. Wilmoth, who's the owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. I wish I could convey to you the atmosphere of this fantastic scene. There are hundreds of cars that are parked in the field in back of me. Police are trying to close off the roadway that leads into the farm, but it's of no use because people are breaking right through. Some of the more daring souls are venturing near the edge of the pit, and their silhouettes stand out against the metal sheen. One man wants to touch the thing. He's having an argument with the policeman, and the policeman is winning. Now, there's something I haven't mentioned in all of this excitement, but it is becoming more distinct, and maybe you've heard it already. Listen now. You hear it? It's a curious humming sound that seems to come from inside the object. Now, we're about 25 feet away from it. Professor Pearson?
Yes, Mr. Phillips.
Can you tell us the meaning of that scraping noise that's coming from inside the thing?
Possibly the unequal cooling of its surface.
Uh-huh. Do you think still that it's a meteor, Professor?
I don't know what you think. The metal casing is definitely extraterrestrial. Friction with the Earth's atmosphere usually tears holes in a meteorite.
So what do you think it is?
Oh, it's moving!
All right, just this minute, because something's happening.
Look, keep back,
I tell you! This is amazing. Look, the end of the thing is beginning to flake off, and the top is rotating like a screw.
There's men in it, and they're trying to escape.
It's ready.
The thing, whatever it is, must be hollow. Wait a minute. Someone's crawling out of the hollow top. Someone or something is peering out of that black hole. There are two luminous disks. Are they eyes? It might be a face. Oh, good heavens. Something is wiggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now it's another one. Now another. They look like tentacles. Now we can see the thing's body. It's large and bare and glistens like wet leather, but... That face is indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. The eyes are black and gleam like a serpent. The mouth is V-shaped. And saliva is dripping from its rimless lips that seem to quiver and pulsate. The alien, or whatever it is, can hardly move. It seems weighed down maybe by gravity or something. The thing is raising up. And the crowd is falling back. This is enough. This is the most incredible experience. You can't find the words to convey this. We're going to have to move back and take cover from some range. Phillips in Grover's Mill.
You're listening to Public Radio News in Washington.
This is listener-powered public radio, and remember, it's your contributions that make it possible for us to bring you these special reports. So thanks for your support during our last fundraising drive. Now don't forget to honor your pledge and mail in that check, and thanks.
This next song is called BB on Mars. It's a song. It's about this BB on Mars.
Whether or not there is life on Mars is pure speculation. Superintelligent beings and exotic plants, let us first consider some of the facts about Mars that astronomers generally agree on. We know that Mars moves in an elliptical path around the sun, and it takes a little less than 2 Earth years to complete the trip. Since Mars travels almost twice as slow as the Earth, we can only observe the planet close up every 2 years. Mars occasionally comes as near as 35 million miles. We know also that Mars is about half the size of Earth, and its gravity is one-third as strong. Like the Earth, Mars rotates, and its day is approximately a half hour longer than our own. It has two tiny moons, which revolve about the planet at great speeds. Also, like the Earth, its axis is tilted, creating the seasons of spring, summer, fall, and winter. In speculating about life on Mars, we must consider these three important factors: its air, its temperature, and its surface features. To roughly determine what sort of air Mars has, we use a spectrograph. This instrument simply breaks the light you'd see from Mars into a band of colors like a rainbow. By analyzing the spectrum picture, astronomers find that the Martian atmosphere is quite different from that of the Earth. It probably consists mostly of nitrogen and a small amount of carbon dioxide with little or no free oxygen. The temperature of Mars is given by the thermocouple, an instrument so sensitive it can measure the heat of a candle 40 miles away. It tells us that the temperature of Mars sometimes reaches a balmy 85 degrees during the day, but drops to 95 degrees below zero in the coldest part of the night. There is a certain amount of guesswork about the surface of Mars. We can see that it's a rosy orange color with patches of darker green. But what causes this coloring, we are not sure. These bright regions could be dry, sandy deserts like our Sahara. Light from Mars is too faint to obtain an instantaneous photograph. An exposure time of at least 1 second must be used. Unfortunately, this isn't fast enough to keep the movement of the Earth's atmosphere from blurring the final photo. For this reason, photographic proof of the Martian canals has never been obtained. With the meager information that has been accumulated over a period of years, astronomers cannot draw too many definite conclusions about Mars. We realize there are probably certain unavoidable errors in our calculations, any one of which could make a big difference as to whether or not there is life as we know it on Mars.
Oh, giving you speed enough? It happens overnight, all this power to it than that. Forget that knowledge. That's what life is. A long series of forgettings. The forgetting is speed enough? It happens overnight. Oh, there's more to it than that. Forget that knowledge. That's what life is. A long series of forgettings.
Thank you, caller.
Their only interest is watching meaningless Earth programs on the video.
As leader of the Martians, you must do something about it.
Propaganda. Debunkery and so forth. Yeah.
Anniversary space note number 2.
Martians go home. A World Vision fantastic fantasy coming up next.
Over the edge.
Drapo! Drapo, you lazy good for nothing, where are you? Stand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chief Keemar, sir.
Droppo, you are the laziest man on Mars. Why are you sleeping during working hours?
I wasn't sleeping, Chief. It's just that I haven't been able to sleep these last few nights. I forgot how. So I was just practicing.
It's no wonder. They sit in front of a video set all day watching those ridiculous Earth programs. It confuses them. Where are they?
Oh, and they're watching Earth programs.
Over the edge.
I told you not to watch those silly Earth programs. Now go to sleep. Ancient one of Mars, I call upon you. We need you, Totem.
On Mars?
Well, I guess that takes care of that. Earth has had Santa Claus long enough. We will bring him to Mars. I'm against it.
25th anniversary space note number 2. Coming in 3, 2, 1.
This is a NASA 25th anniversary space note. In October 1958, only a few days after the space agency came into being, serious planning got underway to place an American into space. The project was called Mercury, and less than 5 years later, a half dozen Mercury astronauts had proved they could withstand the rigors of launch, fly into weightless space, orbit the Earth, then return to a safe splashdown and suffer no ill effects from the experience. In the mid-60s, Project Gemini began a program designed as a bridge between Mercury and Apollo. Pairs of Gemini astronauts worked and walked in space during missions lasting as long as 2 weeks. They tested and refined techniques and procedures which were essential to subsequent moon landing assignments. And in a broader sense, the pioneering accomplishments of both Mercury and Gemini firmly established man's continuing role in the future of space research and exploration. This has been a NASA 25th anniversary space note.
Transmitting Earth sub-area broadcasting from the Universal Media Network.
We on? Are we back on? We're in back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmoth's garden now. And from here I have a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail, as long as I can talk, as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. There are about 30 of them. There's no need to push back the crowd now, because they're quite willing to keep their distance. The captain is conferring with someone. I can't quite see who. Yeah, I believe it is Professor Pearson. It is indeed Professor Pearson. Now they've parted. The professor is moving around to one side. He's studying the object while the captain and two policemen are advancing with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole, a flag of truce, I suppose, if those creatures know what that means or what anything means. A hump shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the mirror. What is that? A jet of flame. It's springing from that mirror. It leaps right at the advancing men and strikes them head on. Oh, good Lord, they're turning into flame. And then the whole field's caught fire. The woods, the barn, the gas tanks of automobiles are blowing up. It's spreading everywhere. It's coming this way. It's about 20 yards to the right.
To visit Grandma up on Mars. Did you ever see a Martian beard? The whiskers are purple and curly and weird. And two faces are harder than just one to shave. So two-headed Martians just naturally rave. For the cooler, more comfortable shaving they get with push-button lather and blade by Gillette. Yeah, the Gillette Adjustables made lots of pals among little green men of the Martian Canal. Whippy-dippy-doo-dow, Scooby-Doo. You can and should, that's try it too, because whether it's peach fuzz or whiskers like wire, I'm sure you'll find the chicks admire a clean, close shave, and that's what you get when you harvest your shrubbery with Adjustable Gillette. Now you take it from Daddy, because this ain't no jive. The Gillette Adjustables, $1.95. Self-assured, good-looking and cool. That's what you'll be when you follow my rule. Blade and lather.
Banth, Martian lion, dwells in Dead Sea areas, is carnivorous, has 10 legs. Kalat, a pony-sized Martian dog with a frog-like head. Thoth, a dog-sized Martian horse with about 8 legs. Martian plant man, half human, half plant, 10 feet tall, has one white-ringed protruding eye.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Walt Disney.
Thank you, Garko. This is our story.
Shape of a cube, standing in the center of the universe, with all other heavenly bodies scattered round and about. Being in the center of the universe, the Earth is assailed by the rotating ether, which tears away bits of Earth, flinging them outward, setting them afire, creating stars and planets.
Learned men of science, I have listened to all your arguments. I now decree that our great Earth stands immovable as the hub of the universe, the supreme center of intelligent thinking.
Stupidity, superstition, and sorcery. Of Mars are clothed in fibers. They converse by means of thought transference. The Earthmen are taken to Mars, where they are wined and dined on synthetic food.
Earthling,
hamburger. Take me to your leader.
Uh-oh, you must be from Mars.
Precisely. How did you know?
I don't know. Just clever, I guess. How did you get down to Earth?
In a flying saucer, of course. How else?
And they started talking, with Popeye asking the man from Mars all about life on his planet. Finally, Popeye asked the question,
what do you Marsiacs eat?
We have a national food. We call it grit junk. It is composed of two pieces of bun with meat in between.
Why, we have something like that down here on Earth, too. We calls it a hamburger.
A ham-ham-gerber?
No, hamburger. Come on, Marsiac, I'll buy you one. Nobody can say us Eartheners ain't hospitable.
And so Popeye took the man from Mars into a restaurant and bought him a hamburger. And Popeye bought him another. And another. And another. He was all blue, and there was a radio aerial sprouting from his head.
The radio is
a strange creature came over to Popeye and said,
"Greetings, Earthling."
"Okay, Marsling. I suppose you're hungry, huh? How about some meat between two pieces of buns?"
"As if I'm like..."
"Sounds like home. Up there, we call that a fitnagel. What do you call it?"
"Why, we call them hamburgers. Come along and I'll give you a sample."
So he took the blue man into a restaurant and he ordered a hamburger. But suddenly, the blue man took a funny-looking gun out of his belt and pointed it at the waiter and pulled the trigger. It made a strange sound. And the waiter was paralyzed. The blue man ate 17 hamburgers, which Popeye paid for.
"Well, next time, I'll be smarter. From now on, every time I meet some Marsnik, I am going to put him under a shower before I buy him a hamburger."
Marsumia, warlike people of Mars.
We know a little place in the American far west where Charlie Briggs chops up the finest prairie-fed beef.
Human bipeds with variegated color characteristics.
You want one more?
More on what beef?
You missed the first beef.
We missed it.
You emphasize very fair,
but you can't emphasize beef.
Come on, fellas, you're losing your head.
Thank you.
H.G. Wells excited countless imaginations with his approach to life on Mars.
Come down!
In his War of the Worlds, he describes an invasion of the Earth by octopus-like creatures who are encased in giant fighting machines. With their heat rays and poisonous gases, they are quite invincible until they encounter the common germs in our atmosphere. The people of Mars would probably walk on their hind legs, their barrel-chested bodies covered with a coating of down. Their ample skulls would be crammed with intelligence, and their trunk-like noses indispensable for feats of engineering.
The first day of spring, every heart would have a new song to sing, and we'd sing of the joy every morning would bring. If I rule the world, every man would be as free as a bird. Every voice would be a voice to be heard. Take my word, we would treasure each day that occurred. My world be a beautiful place where we would weave such wonderful dreams. My world would wear a smile on its face like the man in the moon has. When the moon beams, if I rule the every man would say the world was his friend. There'd be happiness that no man could end. No, my friend, not if I rule the world. Every head would be held up high. Sunshine in everyone's sky. If the day ever dawned when I ruled the
beyond the Earth, at the outer fringe of life's temperature zone, is Mars, the third planet in our solar system where life could exist. Even though scientists think Martian conditions are severe, they believe that if man journeyed to Mars, he could survive here with moderate protection. He would need his own oxygen supply and some sort of protective covering. But life could be almost normal within pressurized houses and pressurized cities.
as we face the serious problems of overpopulation and depletion of natural resources, the possibility of Mars becoming a new frontier is of increasing importance in our plans for the future.
Ozzy's surprise party for Harriet Nelson mushrooms into a surprise for him.
Could have one more dose. Sure.
What?
Could have just one more take of that. No, I'm the engineer. Well, I thought there was a slight bump in our budget, like you say.
This is queer looking.
What's that? What do you got?
All these people applied for Social Security cards in the same town in New Jersey on the exact same date. 46 Yo-Yo Dine employees, Grover's Mills, New Jersey, 11-1-38. I got some pictures, boys.
Practical joke. Check out these names. John Yaya, John Parrott, John Big Booty,
maybe not. John Nolan, John O'Connor.
Wait, Jose.
John Smallberries. It's a joke. Maybe that's what Buckaroo was talking about when he said...
No, no, Reno, there are no ages and no places of birth. Grover's Mill. Grover's Mill, 1938. Why is that so familiar?
They all have the same first name. John, 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 John.
Somebody's playing games here. This is statistically impossible.
No, wait a minute. November 1, October... 3 days since October, April, June, November, short February. Done all the rest have 31, October 31st. Halloween. Don't you get it? Orson Welles.
I mean, the guy from the old wine commercials.
Here under protest is beef burgers.
Halloween, 1938, War of the Worlds, that fake radio news broadcast that got everybody scared, thinking real-life Martians. Landing in Grover's Mill. Jersey. But then it all just turned out to be a hoax.
So,
maybe it wasn't a hoax. Or, I mean, maybe it isn't a hoax.
Under protest.
This is Walter Cronkite, CBS News, and I'll be back in a couple of minutes.